Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:03 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 11th. I thought we'd kick off today and look at Amazon because it was up marginally today. But more important than that is that it broke down below $1,600 on Friday and did not pop back above it in here today. There has been a consolidation which has been really rather tight over the course of the last month. It's been ranging between $1,600 and $1,700, and the sequence of lower rally highs evident since the beginning of September is still very much intact. And until that sequence of lower rally highs has been broken and we have a confirmed higher reaction low, then it would be too early to conclude that we are completely out of the woods just yet with Amazon. But I think what's also interesting is that Amazon has been, over the course of the last few years, and one of the reasons that it did so very well and was favored by investors is that they moved from not making any profit at all to making at least some profits. And when we look at the wider consumer discretionary sector, then I think it is noteworthy that the broader index didn't peak until the beginning of October, so Amazon was leading it, and it has held up somewhat better over the course of the last few weeks. It's held an upward bias, but of course there is still also the sequence of lower rally highs, and it hasn't yet really given us evidence of a higher reaction low yet. In fact, it's been able to hold this upward bias to trading ever since the post-Christmas rally began. What we are starting to see, however, is that a number of the constituents of what we might term not strictly consumer discretionary, but consumer staples companies, are raising prices. So Procter & Gamble has now broken out to new all-time highs, and it has been ranging for 4 years. So that's a pretty impressive advance. When we look at, for example, Clorox, then it has bounced from the region of its trend mean. Church and Dwight has also been talking about raising prices on everything from dish detergent to baking soda, and it has bounced from the region of its trend mean. So while there is certainly some, I think, concern being expressed about the consumer discretionary sector, not least because of the impact of the tax cuts and the way that that changed withholding taxes, and also therefore the what we could expect from the tax refunds for a lot of payroll employees in the USA, we are also seeing that we have consumer staples that have rebounded. Now, this has been a significant loss of uptrend consistency over the course of the last year. Now we've seen that prices have bounced from the lows posted over the course of the last 3 years, and that 500 point level is going to be an awfully big psychological level for this index. Now there are, when we think about the wider global environment, there are three different ways of thinking about it, and we need to try and to knit them together to come up with some idea of where the fabric of the market is leading us right now. First is the dollar index has bounced pretty emphatically from the region of the trend mean, so it has held its upward bias. And then we have the fact that the S&P 500 has continued to advance. Now, it is certainly pausing over the course of the last few days, and it is right in the region of its trend mean, and it has certainly posted an incredibly impressive rebound off the lows in late December, but we don't yet have a higher reaction low. So it's in exactly the same condition as we have with Amazon. But then we have bond yields, and the 10-year Treasury yield was in positive territory in here today. So we did get at least some evidence of a pause in terms of the 10-year futures rally. and it has been steady over the course of the last 6 weeks. 121 represents the last place it found support and the upper side of the underlying trading range. So that is the big level in terms of the Treasury prices. So Treasury prices are suggesting that the bond market is not particularly enamored with the idea that the Federal Reserve is going to be raising interest rates at all. And the stock market rebounding is suggesting that people are also betting that we're going to still be in a liquidity-fueled environment, and financial conditions have lightened up, or eased up, I should say, quite considerably over the course of the last 8 weeks. So the stock market is also betting that the Federal Reserve is not going to be raising interest rates. But when we look at the dollar, the strength of the dollar suggests that there is going to be a significant benefit to holding US assets. Now, that might be part of the reason why we have this continued strength in US Treasuries, and indeed for the stock market, that people are still willing to bet that the USA might be facing challenges, but that challenges elsewhere are considerably more of a headwind. So that's one consideration. But then, if we have large numbers of consumer discretionary type companies and consumer staple type companies raising their prices, then that's inflationary. When you have people that feel like they've just had a tax hike because they're not getting their tax refunds, well, then that's also potentially inflationary, because the next thing they're going to start doing is asking for more money. When we look at the average hourly earnings, then we are also presented with a trend that does look like it's going higher from here, and it's currently around 3.2%. So we're definitely getting wage growth, and that's certainly starting to come through here. So we also can look at where wage growth has peaked in other cycles. So I don't think we're getting the that is probably a better way of thinking about it here. When you look at 2009, wage growth peaked around 3.5%. It peaked around 3.5% in 2007. I think there's definitely an issue with Bloomberg, because that's saying 1951, and that's definitely not the case. So perhaps we'll just look at a different type of chart. When we look at the trend, though, wage growth is improving. And then you also have to think that asset prices have been reasonably resilient. Then the other, I think, important chart here is the continuous commodity index. And it was in negative territory in here today, and not least because the dollar has been resurgent. When we look at it on a weekly basis, then we can see that it has been largely range-bound over the course of the last 3 years, and it's at the lower side of its range. So when we look at the US economy, then there is potential for inflationary pressures to start to march higher later in the year. Then we have the prospect that yields have already pulled back, and they're not pricing in the potential for inflation. So what that suggests is that with wage growth already approximating the place where it peaked back in 2007 through 2009, what that suggests is that this could potentially be late in the cycle type activity, where companies finally feel like they have the courage to raise prices just before you start to get a contraction. That's one potential conclusion. When we look at high yield spreads, then we've also seen that there's been a substantial rebound, and that rebound remains very much intact. So as long as we continue to see that the stock markets are trending higher, that's likely to be positive for high yield spreads. But when we look at the actual spread chart itself, rather than an ETF of the prices, then it hasn't quite unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean yet. And so far, it has very clearly sustained the breakout from that 2-year base formation. So we have definitely seen some form of pause and some of the selling pressure coming off of the high yield sector, but it is also too early to conclude that that is in fact over. Now, when we look at what is going on in China, then I think one of the points that is most relevant is that appearances can be deceiving. We continue to hear people talking about the fact that auto sales have been deteriorating, and that is obviously one of the things that people would gravitate towards in terms of trying to get a read on consumers. But there is the additional fact that there have been an increasingly large number of cities that have instituted limitations on car ownership. So that may not, in fact, be the best way of thinking about the consumer. On the other hand, at least anecdotal evidence is that some of the ski resorts outside Beijing are empty, and that is representative of people pulling back from additional expenditures. Then there's a temptation to think that the Chinese government's announcement over the course of the last few weeks, and particularly before the New Year holiday, was that they were going to lower taxes and to narrow the band of people that would be paying taxes. And obviously, that would be considered a positive for the economy. But if you read the fine print, what they're in fact trying to do is to get more of the people who in fact should be paying tax to do so. And that is a very significant change. It could introduce an additional 40 million people into paying taxes that they have so far been avoiding. Well, on the other hand, they have pretty much completed the unwinding of the shadow banking sector. So if they are going to try and impose more taxes on more people, then obviously that is a headwind for both the consumer and for the economy. But it would also suggest that they may ease up on other parts of the economy in order to soften the blow. So the A-share index was in positive territory today following the New Year holiday, and it has further started to unwind its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. The H-share index is right at the upper side of its range over the course of the last 7 or 8 months, but it is above the trend mean, and as long as it can sustain this move above the trend mean, then we can start to think about this downtrend over the last year having been broken. So that is beginning to suggest that some of the headwinds that have been assailing the Chinese market over the course of the last year are beginning to abate because the central government is taking its foot off the market's neck. Of course, what happens in terms of the trade war is going to have a profound effect on China, and not least on perceptions by foreign investors, as to what the outlook for the market is going to be. When we look at the renminbi, then it was in weaker territory, really in a rather dynamic manner in here today. Well, that is now starting to, if we start threading some of these moves together, that is the renminbi encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean. The dollar remains really quite firm, but it is most particularly firm against the euro. And one of the adages that David has, or could definitely be considered one of David's Fullerisms, would be that there is no country wants a strong currency, but some need a weaker currency more than others. And that is particularly the case for Europe. There are an increasing number of European countries are embarking on fiscal stimulus, and I definitely saw a rather interesting graph to demonstrate that in here today. So you can see, for example, that Italy and Greece and Cyprus are those that are leading the charge in terms of their fiscal stimulus, although it is still well within the bounds of what might be accepted by the austerity program, but even Germany is going to run something of a deficit, and then some of the other countries like Luxembourg are also running deficits. Well, this is obviously something that is going to increase if we see that Italy is in recession and France has got its challenges from the Yellow Vest movement, and then you have other countries like Germany where you have entitlements are going to be rising progressively as the population ages. What happens in terms of the trade war is obviously going to have a profound effect on Europe, considering that a very considerable quantity of their exports go to China. Well, the Euro Stoxx index was in mildly positive territory in here today. It was a generally positive day on European stock markets, but of course one has to conclude that the weakness of the euro is a considerable contributing factor in the reasonable strength of the European markets in here today. Then, of course, we have continued uncertainty about Brexit, and I continue to think that the most likely scenario is that a deal will get pushed through and that it is going to amount to membership of the EU in all but name. We can also clearly see here that the euro does have toppy I usually look at this the other way around, but I thought that today it would be more instructive to look at it versus the euro. It looks increasingly like the euro has got topping activity versus the pound, and it has been ranging for nearly 3 years already. That there have been repeated attempts to sustain the move above 90p, and it just hasn't been able to do it. So now the question is, if it can't go up, perhaps it can go down. And Europe is, I think, one of the really key risks that we have in the global economy. And of course, China is the other. There is obviously a desire in China to raise revenue. They have got very considerable challenges in terms of the debt that's residing among the regional banks and the regional municipalities. So they've been trying to wean the economy off of stimulus over the last few years, and they have at least achieved some victories on that front, but now the economy is slowing down, and the consumer is obviously a little wary of the intentions to both clamp down on social freedoms and also to raise taxes. So there are obviously risks out there. Well, we also then can look at what is happening in terms of the bond markets. Bund yields were in mildly positive territory in here today, so we're getting at least some unwinding of what is a short-term overbought condition on the Bund future. But there's still a very clear progression of higher reaction lows that remains intact. When we look at the Italian 10-year yield, then it has rallied over the course of the last 10 days, and it has paused this, or at least in here today, around the 3% level. Well, 3% is a rather big psychological level for the Italian market, but it is back above its trend mean, and it is hard to really make a case for why Italian yields should be trading below 2%, considering the risk both politically and economically that it represents to the European Union. Now, when we think about other emerging markets, well, India has got its election coming up, and they are certainly but the Modi administration is trying to buy the election. The Nifty today was in mildly negative territory. The banking sector, which has had a a great deal of volatility in terms of the single stock volatility that's been inside its constituents. Well, it was also in negative territory in here today, and it has had been rolling over a little over the course of the last 6 weeks. So now the much broader question is whether the policy of trying to buy the election, both with tighter regulations on foreign firms and by lowering interest rates, is in fact going to be successful. Generally speaking, when we've looked at other countries that when populist administrations take over, they don't generally get as big a majority when they go for election the next time out because some of the luster gets rubbed off. That's probably quite likely now with the BJP. It would be stunning eventuality if they were able to hold on to their absolute majority. And I think that it is quite likely that the next government in India is going to be some form of coalition, but probably still a right-leaning coalition. When we look at some of the other markets, then the Brazilian market has also, well, it has developed a short-term overbought condition, and it does look likely that it is going to be unwound. The South African rand has been weakening over the course of the last few sessions, and it has not been able to sustain the move below or stronger than 13.5. So now this is a big question here, whether we are seeing just a short-term pause in terms of the rand's advance, or whether it is going to be able to sustain, or the dollar is going to be able to sustain a move back above 14. This resurgence in terms of the dollar is, I think, some evidence that we're getting at least some risk getting taken off the table. That when you get when you get the dollar starting to do better, and then U.S. Treasuries having been so firm over the last while, then that also helps to explain why we've had some such interest in gold. Now, gold prices were weaker in here today, but off their lows on the day. This doesn't look like anything other than a consolidation. And so far, this range has been relatively similar size to the one that was put in for most of January. The big level for gold is going to be around $1,380. That's the upper side of its range. And if it can sustain a move up and out of the range, well, then we will be back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. I think that there are challenges mounting up on on the horizon for this rally in risk assets that we've had over the course of the last 7 weeks. And we really do need to see some higher reaction lows on stock markets to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The real prospect of inflationary pressures rising in the latter half of this year could be a factor that would prompt the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates against its will, and that could be a rather delicate operation from the perspective of investor sentiment. So we've certainly got some reasons to think about why the stock market should pause, but so far it hasn't. And part of the reason why it hasn't is because we have got very clear, I think, indications that there are sources of liquidity that are starting to come back into the market. This has been a liquidity-fueled market over the course of the last decade. I think investors have become very much conditioned to searching for liquidity flows. The real prospect that China is going to embark on additional fiscal stimulus, that Europe could be on the cusp of abandoning its austerity program, and or at least busting its deficit rules, that the USA could be on the cusp of an infrastructure bill. These are all suggestive that not only do we have the prospect of additional monetary stimulus, but that there is ample scope for fiscal stimulus. And that could, in fact, be one of the things that could push these markets on to extend the medium-term uptrend. So we could potentially have some pause in consolidation that could persist for a while longer over the course of the next few weeks because of the strength of the dollar. When the dollar strengthens, it does tend to leach liquidity out of the market. So we saw, for example, that in here today, the total assets on central bank balance sheets contracted by about $84 billion because of the strength of the dollar. And that is likely to act as a headwind for stock markets as long as it persists. The fact that you get a strengthening dollar against a background where the Federal Reserve is still reducing the size of its balance sheet is something that is a tailwind for the dollar because it reduces supply. And when you create a dearth of dollars, that makes other currencies less valuable, and therefore the balances on the central bank balance sheets tend to contract. Well, generally speaking, then, we have a short-term overbought condition. We have the potential for some additional weakness. It's when the dollar starts to weaken again that we would have evidence of some money starting to flow back into the global economy, and that's when we could also anticipate that we get an additional round of stimulus. So I don't think yet that we are out of the woods. I think we have not yet seen a higher reaction low, and that it is inevitable we're eventually going to get one. And it's at that point then that we could conclude that we are completely out of the woods. So I think with that I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.